Sheeran. I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hit.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Novak. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Jonathan Evans reports on Sri Lanka's economic crisis. Ana Mateo brings us this week's words and their stories. Dan Friedel has a story on academic exchanges with Russia for the Higher Education Report. I return with a story on Chinatowns in North America. And Faith Perlow has a story on cement made from food waste. But first,
Lasanda Deepthi is a 43-year-old Sri Lankan auto rickshaw driver near the capital, Colombo. An auto rickshaw is a three-wheeled motorized vehicle used for public transport. Deepthi carefully observes her fuel levels to make sure there is enough before accepting a job. When her fuel tank is almost empty, she joins a line of people waiting to refuel at a gas station. "I spend more time in line for petrol than doing anything else," she said. "Sometimes I join a line about 3 p.m., but only get fuel about 12 hours later." Deepthi added that a few times when she made it to the front of the line, the station had run out of fuel. In mid-May, Deepthi said she spent 2.5 days in a line for fuel, assisted by one of her brothers. Deepthi is one of millions of people in Sri Lanka battling rising inflation and falling wages. The country faces shortages of everything from fuel to medicine during its worst economic crisis since independence in 1948. Deepthi has been an auto rickshaw driver for 7 years to support her family of five. Since the financial crisis hit, she has struggled to find enough fuel and earn enough money. Deepthi usually earns about $138 each month. But her income started falling in January, and she now earns only about half that amount. Deepthi's goal on most days is simply to find fuel. Fuel prices have increased 259% since October 2021. The beginnings of Sri Lanka's current crisis lie in the COVID-19 pandemic. The country's profitable tourism industry was severely affected, as well as foreign workers' payments. Tax cuts enacted by former President Gotabaya Rajapaksa's administration also played a part in the crisis. Many Sri Lankans are angry at the widespread shortages. They accuse the powerful Rajapaksa family of mishandling the economy. Thousands of protesters have taken to the streets across Sri Lanka in recent months for mostly peaceful demonstrations. New Prime Minister Ranil Wickremesinghe plans to announce a budget in the coming weeks that will greatly cut spending. He says the plan will redirect the money toward a 2-year public aid program. His policies are also expected to push forward negotiations with the International Monetary Fund for badly needed loans. But Deepthi remains deeply concerned about her financial future. The car she bought with her savings had to be sold last year after she fell behind on payments. A second auto rickshaw needs repairs, and she is more than $280 behind on loan payments for land she bought before the pandemic. Deepthi also wants to visit her 3-month-old granddaughter. But she is not sure how she can travel 170 kilometers to the town where her daughter lives. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. The English language has several expressions that describe things that happen very fast. Today we will talk about several. Some involve body parts, and some involve acts of nature. Let's start with our bodies. There are some things we humans do very quickly, namely our blinking eyes and beating hearts. Those bodily actions happen incredibly fast. So we use in the blink of an eye and in a heartbeat to describe things that happen in no time at all. Here are some examples. She accepted the new job in a heartbeat. She didn't need to think about it at all. When he hit the lottery, all his money problems disappeared in the blink of an eye. Now, some may say that blink of an eye is redundant. After all, the only part of the body we can blink are the eyes. So just saying blink is enough. She blinked and her friend was gone. But when we use the expression, we always say the word eye. We also don't think about blinking our eyes or beating our hearts. Well, hopefully we don't. So the expressions also mean that no thought was involved in the action. If something happens in the blink of an eye or in a heartbeat, it happens in no time flat. This strange little phrase also means something happens in a very short amount of time. For example, my friend reached my house in no time flat. She wasted no time in getting here. Okay, now let's talk about the expressions from the natural world. If you are very fast, we might compare you to two powers in nature, wind and lightning. These two are usually used in the form of a simile. A simile compares things using like or as. And we usually use them when describing a person's actions. So we might say, you move or run like the wind. Or we might say, you are as fast as lightning. With lightning, we could also use the words with a hyphen and say, you are lightning fast. Also, when lightning happens, it happens as a flash of lightning or bolt of lightning. Both these words, flash and bolt, are also used to describe fast things. If something happens in a flash, it happens at lightning speed. And if I bolt somewhere, I run very fast to get there. For example, when it started to rain, I bolted to my car. Now, let's hear some friends use these expressions together. They are waiting for a third friend in front of a movie theater. Hi, thanks for coming to the movies with me.
I love movies. As soon as you texted, I responded in a heartbeat.
It's a good thing I came early and got tickets. They sold out in the blink of an eye. Hey, where's Steve?
He had some work to finish up, so he might be a bit late.
Oh, look, there he is now. Hey, Steve. Looks like you ran all the way here.
I was running from work, not to the movies. So, what's the name of the movie anyway?
Lightning McGrady and the Race Against Time.
Sounds great. I can't wait. What's it about?
A fast man. Now, let's go inside and get a seat.
He's not just fast, he's lightning fast. When he runs, he can slow down time. Hey, who wants popcorn or a drink?
There's no time. People are going in. You'll miss the trailers. And you love trailers.
No problem. I'll be back in a flash.
Hold on. I'll go buy drinks and popcorn. After all, you bought the tickets. Just save me a seat.
Great, Steve. Thanks. And that's all the time we have for this Words and Their Stories. Until next time, I'm Anna Mateo.
When Russia invaded Ukraine in late February, many Western governments acted to restrict trade and other exchange with Vladimir Putin's government. But the restrictions with Russia have not only affected the exchange of goods, the restrictions have also affected academic exchange. Western students studying in Russia came home. Universities in the United States that offered support to Russian universities withdrew their financial and academic aid. Western scientists working with Russian scientists suspended their research. Eric Burakovsky is an expert on international law and diplomacy at Tufts University in Massachusetts. He is also the assistant director of the Russia and Eurasia program at the university's Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. In an explainer written for The Conversation, Burakovsky said that the cutting of ties with Russian universities will harm academic exchange. He added that without the exchange of ideas between Russians and Western scholars, President Vladimir Putin may be able to keep democratic ideas from coming into his country.
What kind of connections existed between Western and Russian universities?
Since the end of the Cold War in 1991, Burakovsky said, Russian and Western universities worked on academic exchange programs, lesson development, and research projects. As a result, Russia's universities have become stronger. Russian universities also built school buildings in former Soviet countries and offered their students chances to study abroad. In recent years, Russian universities taught more classes in English. This helped welcome students from other countries. Russian universities also created degree programs with Western universities.
What have the relationships produced?
Western and Russian students learned about each other's cultures, languages, and societies. Scientists worked together on projects related to space exploration, physics, climate change, Arctic biology, and more. However, after a while, Russian leaders started to worry about educating young people in the Western way. They thought the Western ideas might influence young people. They were concerned those young people would then protest and ask for a more open government and open elections. Even before the invasion of Ukraine, Putin's government started restricting the kind of organizations that could work in Russia. For example, in 2021, an American professor at St. Petersburg State University was deported because of his connection with Bard College in New York State. Bard was considered an undesirable organization. That same year, Russia changed an education law and required government approval for all foreign academic partnerships. The law related to propaganda and negative foreign influence in the educational process.
Are future relationships between Western universities and Russian universities in trouble because of the war?
Burakovsky says yes. While many academic leaders in the U.S. cautioned against moving too quickly, students are no longer permitted to study in Russia, and most U.S. universities ended support of programs in Russia. A number of universities ended their financial investments in Russia as well. For example, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology ended a partnership that had cost millions of dollars with the Skolkovo Institute of Science and Technology in Russia. The partnership had been in place since 2010.
What are the reasons both for and against breaking ties with Russia?
Britain also said it would remove funding for all research projects with links to Russia. Chris Philp is Britain's Minister for Technology and the Digital Economy. He said he does not see how anyone in good conscience can collaborate with Russian universities. Philp and others who support ending attachments with Russia say it is a way to stand against Putin and his government. They also say breaking academic connections protects their countries from Russian spying, hurts Putin's ability to spread propaganda, and reduces Russia's ability to steal technology. Opponents of the stand against Russia say students and scholars are getting hurt. They add that the plan to detach from Russia sets a bad example for the future of international exchange. They say that cooperating on work such as scientific research strengthens democracy and fights the spread of false ideas. Nations working together on research, they say, supports the idea that countries can work together to solve political problems too.
How will the broken connections affect higher education in Russia?
Burakovsky suggests the broken connections will hurt young Russian scholars. The moves also may help Putin's government by making the students and teachers feel like there is no hope of help from the West. Russian researchers say they feel the lack of connection with colleagues in other parts of the world. Russia said in March that it would not permit its scientists and educators to take part in international meetings.
Can Russian scholars safely speak against the invasion of Ukraine?
In short, Burakovsky says no, and points to recent laws in Russia that punish the spread of false information with up to 15 years in prison. Educators in Russia risk losing their jobs and going to prison if they criticize the war. Many teachers, students, and writers left the country on their own when the war started. I'm Dan Friedel.
Chinatowns are areas in cities outside of mainland China that are home to large numbers of Chinese people. Cultural and arts organizations in Chinatowns across North America have worked for years to bring greater awareness to these communities. But Asian communities have recently faced two major problems: pandemic-related shutdowns and a rise in racist anti-Asian attacks. But those painful experiences are important to the return of Chinatowns as places of community and culture. There has also been an increased interest in business and events from cities, companies, and younger Asians from outside the Chinese community. Wells Fargo Bank recently partnered with the Chinatown Media and Arts Collaborative on the Heroes Mural in San Francisco, which includes 12 Asian American and Pacific Islanders important to the local community. Everyone wanted to really address anti-Asian hate and to uplift Asian American voices, said Jenny Long, executive director of the Chinese Culture Center of San Francisco. In New York, the first of 5 summer night markets start next month in the city's Chinatown. It will be the biggest event so far for Think Chinatown. The nonprofit group, which opened 5 years ago, has done projects like artists in residency programs and oral histories. But there was a collective feeling of "we just need to be together," said Yin Kong, director of Think Chinatown. In the Chinatown of Vancouver, British Columbia, the pandemic worsened ongoing problems of vandalism, graffiti, and other crimes. But within the last year, the city was able to start cultural projects planned before COVID-19. Last month, the Chinatown Mural Project displayed several murals painted by a local artist. In November, the Chinatown Storytelling Center opened. "We would have done this anyway, regardless of the pandemic," said Carol Lee, head of the Vancouver Chinatown Foundation, which oversees the center. "But you know, in some ways, it makes you feel like you have more purpose because it's more necessary." There are fewer than 50 Chinatowns across the U.S. Some are more active than others. Many Chinatowns were created in the 19th century as Chinese workers arrived. The workers often lived there because of discrimination in other places. The workers lived in single-room housing units, or SROs, with shared kitchens and bathrooms, said Harvey Dong. He is a professor in ethnic studies and Asian American studies at the University of California, Berkeley. Many older Chinese Americans and immigrants in Chinatown still live in those units. There has also been a lot of development in Chinatowns. For example, SROs have been sold in San Francisco, and a train line expansion has shrunk the Chinatown in Seattle. Chinatowns in other places are now very small or have disappeared because of gentrification. Gentrification is the process of changing a place by making it more appealing to wealthier people. But arts and culture supporters continue to move forward on projects in Chinatowns. Chinatown Media and Arts Collaborative in San Francisco is designing Edge on the Square, a $26.5 million media and arts center that is set to open in 2025. In New York, Think Chinatown plans to open a space with a kitchen for art shows and cooking classes. The hope is to keep Asian Americans inside and outside of Chinatown connected.
University of Tokyo researchers in Japan have created a new technology that uses food waste in a surprising way. Student Kota Machida and Professor Yuya Sukai say the operation can turn food waste into a strong but bendable material like cement. They say it is 4 times stronger than regular concrete and is sustainable. And you can eat it, the researchers found. Professor Sukai was looking for a way to replace cement-based concrete with sustainable materials. Cement production releases high levels of carbon dioxide waste into the air, says research group Chatham House. Food waste is a big problem in Japan and the world. In 2019, Japan produced 5.7 million tons of food waste. The government is working on reducing this to 2.7 million by 2030. The food waste that would typically end up in landfills, rotting, and releasing methane gas can now be used to make the concrete. The material can be reused and buried in the ground if not needed, without affecting the environment. Sukai and Machida say they hope the new material can replace plastic and cement and slow global warming linked to food waste as well. At first, Sukai used wood particles with heat and pressure to create the concrete, and then he moved on to food waste with plastics mixed in. Through a process of drying, crushing, and compressing the food waste, Sakai and his student Machida had successfully made cement from food waste without plastic. They adjusted the pressure and the temperature with simple equipment that can be bought from the internet. The most challenging part was that each type of food waste requires different temperatures and pressure levels, Sukai said. The team have used different types of food waste to make the cement, including tea leaves, orange peels, coffee grounds, and leftover lunch materials. Since the cement can be eaten, Sukai and Machida have changed the flavors with different spices. They have enjoyed the different colors, smell, and even the taste of the cement. Sukai said that in order to eat it, a person needs to break it apart and boil it. Machida, along with 2 friends, have created a company called Fabula Incorporated. They are working with other companies to use the material to make products for the home. Sukai said that the process of creating the cement could be used to make temporary housing that can be eaten if a disaster happens. He said, for example, if food cannot be delivered to evacuees, they could eat makeshift beds made out of food cement. I'm Faith Perlow.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Dan Novak.